Blog Talk Radio.
Bear with me for a moment. Yeah, no, there's a lag in my studio. Do me a favor, sweet. Well, first, hello, hello, and I will play my opening song in half a minute. Sweet, can you look up Just a Fool for me?
I will.
You are awesome.
Not a problem.
Someone's reporting that to HR.
Okay. Not a problem, not a problem.
Look up Just a Fool.
Yeah, it's not loading any of my...
Got it.
Like, I can't... You're awesome.
Play.
I'm going to play it. Already on it.
Yeah. The shadow whiskey, please, bartender. Keep it coming till I don't remember at all. How bad it hurts when you're gone. Nah, nah, nah. Turn the music up a little bit louder. Just gotta get past the midnight hour. Maybe tomorrow it won't be this hard. Who am I?
We were bad together, but that's just me trying to move on without you. But who am I kidding? I know what I'm
I
And so now, hello, hello, and welcome to a Team of Voices on Blog Talk Radio. I am Pretty Bird, and tonight, beneath the umbra of my wings, the topic is Just a Fool. But before we get into that, I just want you to know that we are a group of poets, writers, creative types that hang out on allpoetry.com, the world's largest poetry site. And if you go there, it is free to join, free to sign up, and look up A Team of Voices, and we are a group on there, and not that I kind of like us, so you may like us too. That was Just a Fool by Christina Aguilera and Blake Shelton. They released that on Christina's album in 2012 in December. And as far as a country pop song goes, I think that she did awesome. I mean, not her usual genre, but I think she kind of kicked butt. And I thought, what a suiting song to start off the day, or the night, really. But I almost forgot. All of our broadcast shows on here, and they vary. We have game shows. We have we delve into literary things and Dungeons and Dragons and humor and all of the things. And it is all sponsored by our very own AP Taylor. So thank you. Thank you for that, Mr. AP Taylor. You are wonderful. And so I was going to go into some – well, first let's say hello because I'm getting ahead of myself. Hello, Miss Sweetie.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I am good. I'm glad that the studio's working. It's been a hot minute since we could get in here. So, yay.
It has.
Let's say hello. It has. Let's say hello to Mr. Rack and Tour.
Hey, thank you for the tribute show.
Oh, I'm assuming because you're the fool, but I don't think so. So we have these lyrics on here because, you know, not for nothing, emotions are irrational by design. I don't care if it is joy or pain or anything in between. You know, logic gets us through, but emotion kind of, you know, sways us this way or that. And when it comes to love, the most notorious of all chemical imbalances, it really can pull us outside of ourselves or those smart and logical choices that we like to think we would make in a situation when we see all the other people that we silently or not so silently want to judge, like, leave him, he's an idiot, or, oh, she cheated, she's got to go. But the truth is everybody has to weigh the good with the bad and see where that balance lies. But invariably, at some point, and for some of us more often than not, we feel like the idiot. We feel like the fool because we love so hard and so much that we're willing to overlook things we would never forgive anybody or we thought we would never forgive anybody for, but then we find ourselves going, ugh, and you know what? Is it worth it? Yeah, it is. And if it works out and you can get past any kind of hurt, and it doesn't have to be anything major because sometimes silence hurts and everybody goes through their own things and just, you know, everybody expects our significant others or those closest to us to understand what our silences and our nuances mean, but we're all idiots and no, we need the verbiage, the words. We're like, listen, I'm going to be processing, you know, work stress, so if I'm a little quiet, it's not you, I'm just going through it. When I can figure stuff out, I will let you know. Like little things so that we don't sit there and go, oh, my God, they hate me. Oh, my goodness, what did I do? Oh, they must be really mad. Because it always has to be us. And I'm sure they think it always has to be them unless they're that upper faction of a-hole where they think it's always everybody else and they don't know that they are the a-hole because, you know, those people exist too. But we're not here talking about them. We're here talking about the rest of us who suffer sometimes silently, sometimes not so silently, all because we love too much. And I like this song. Not just because I hijacked the title for today's show, but because these lyrics break me a little bit. The song, not so much. It doesn't pull you in the feels with the melody, but the lyrics are very much, I had my heart set on you, but nothing else hurts like you do, and who knew that love was so cool. And where is it? Where's the guy part? I said that I don't care. I could walk away, whatever. you know, tell myself that we're bad together, but that's just me trying to move on without you. So here it is. Why do we lie to ourselves? Is that like a coping mechanism? Do we lie and put on a brave front so that they can't see that they got to us? But then doesn't that sometimes lead to them thinking that we don't care and they're the only ones suffering? So we all suffer apart in silence when if we spoke a little bit, maybe we can suffer for a hot minute together and then try to heal. Or if they're the a-hole, because, you know, it's never us, but if they're the a-hole, then, you know, why give them the benefit of you suffering? They've done enough damage. They can just, you know, suffer. And, you know, I'm just saying. So I need some feedback. I almost said boys. Ooh, sweet, you are not a boy, guys, because, you know, guys are just not people. What are your thoughts on, you know, being that in that kind of lack of logic, misty-eyed, kind of quasi-broken-hearted place where, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't?
To me, that's where the fool comes in, I think, because, you know, from what you're describing to me is I always feel like a fool because, you know, how did I believe that, you know, and that's what makes me the fool. It's like how come I didn't see it the way that you see it, and that's why I'm the fool, is because, you know, I believed something that wasn't true. I saw something that wasn't there, and it's not that I'm a fool. Because, you know, sometimes it's because, you know, you reach exceed your grasp, but it's more because, you know, well, you know, why would you think that, you know, and you know, can you convince yourself of something that just, you know, isn't based in reality?
Well, reality shifts with mood, perception, perspective, and that to me goes right back to that lack of that precision of language that most of us suffer from, that lack thereof, because there's a certain expectation when you love somebody enough to pay attention to what they do and how they are, to learn their nuances. The expectation is reciprocity, that they care enough to at the minimum know how you like your coffee. And the expectation is, well, if you have told them 15,000 times about you don't like something, maybe don't do said, you know, such said thing. But here's a little thing. I have been where I am for, dare I say, I don't want to, I'm going to age myself, decades. We'll call it decades. And for, you know, the first decade and a half of this relationship, I don't know how many times I've had to say, I don't like pepperoni pizza. I mean, I'll eat pepperonis. And if there's pepperoni on like a three meat pizza, that's fine. But pepperoni pizza in and of itself, I don't like it. And, it's just I would rather just have a cheese pizza or anything else besides anchovies or mushrooms. So maybe not anything else. But I'm not a big fan of pepperoni pizza. You know, it's just not my thing. So if he would come home and get pizza, invariably he would get the pepperoni pizza. Like he would get like three pizzas because I have a big family, and they'd all be like pepperoni pizza. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like what? He's like, you like pepperoni pizza? No, I have not since long before you met me. I have not in the last 15 freaking years. It's fine. I'll have a ham and cheese sandwich. Just leave me alone. And I would get all kinds of pissed off because to me, it's dismissive. It is passive aggressive. It is downright hurtful because I get so excited. Don't cook. I'll bring food home. At that point, I don't care what it is. I don't have to cook. I'm happy. But when I get all excited because you're being so thoughtful because I've had a day and you don't want to, you know, put me through having to cook and clean and whatever in the kitchen, and then you bring home the one thing I won't eat, knowing that how many times have I told you, you know? It's the expectation is if I'm not going to, like, serve him whatever it is he won't eat, I don't expect him to go out of his way to bring me something that I won't eat. But people don't process information the same way. And because how I like my pizza is not a priority. I mean, he doesn't forget anniversaries or birthdays or anything like that. He knows that when I've had a lot of stress or if I'm in a lot of physical pain because I've got issues, that he understands those nuances without me having to say anything. So it's not like he's inept. It's just pizza was not a priority, you know? Nobody gives a crap about pizza. Nobody usually really cares about how, you know, as long as it's not pineapple or anchovies, people don't have an opinion. It's pizza, we'll eat it. But not me. He finally got it, you know, so he's good now. He'll laugh about it. He'll, like, get a pepperoni pizza and be like, oh, no. And then Dad will open up another pizza and be like, ha-ha, fooled ya. I'm like, yeah, sure, you're funny. But it's that communication where you think you're being specific and they're not processing what their dismissiveness does for you. Or they don't even process it at all, so it's not dismissive. They're not doing it on purpose, even though it reads passive-aggressive. So there's a lot of that, and there's also a lot of we as individuals tend to process other people's actions by how we would react. And so if somebody it does something and, you know, it would piss you off, you expect them to be mad, and so you act accordingly. Or like you said, Rack, like, how could you think I would do that? Well, because they would do that, or it has been done to them, and they've been taught that people do that. And it, 9 times out of 10, doesn't have anything to do with you. But those are hard conversations to have because nobody wants to delve into the little interstices of emotion, those little spaces where nobody wants to linger, those lessons we've learned and we don't want to touch on. And we think everybody's the same because we're all people and people have the same emotions, but we don't. We process everything differently. Like if I tell you Hunter Green, you could be thinking Forest Green or you could be thinking Kelly Green, and because we all process color differently, and you know what I mean? So there's that precision of language, and it's also, by the way, why I, in my regular everyday life, I'm the most annoying person on the planet because I'll say something and then instead of going in a straight line, I will go sideways to make sure that you understand how I meant something and then try to find my way back to where I was. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But because I'm always often misunderstood, even in my writing, I am misunderstood. Not that I care so much about my writing. People are going to read what they want. But in my daily language, in the way I approach things, I don't think that I'm a very straight shooter. You ask me a question, I'm like, you sure you want to know? Because I'll tell you. And people don't know what to do with that because everybody is polite and everybody, you know, there's certain ways to act in society at large and in our interpersonal groups, you know, that there are all these nuances. But I cut through all of that and I'm very, very straight and to the point. And people find that rude. And it took me half of my life and all of my childhood to realize that people didn't know what to do with that, that I was intimidating because I don't have a problem. Nothing was confrontational to me. It's just straightforward questions. I prefer the straightforward questions because I can give you a straightforward answer and then we're on the same page and there's no questions. But that's not normal. And so people process love especially through their own pain, not through their joy. Yeah?
She was saying to the dog, she's telling the dog to get down.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So because, well, no, you're fine. But go ahead.
No,
because you haven't spoken. I've been speaking for like 10 minutes, so feel free.
No, I'm agreeing with you and nodding my head. Yes, I am in the same boat as you, which is why we are kind of kindred spirits where you're too blunt, you're too sharp, you need to soften, what do I need to soften? I don't carry a blade, I carry truth, or what I perceive as truth. You asked me if that was black or white, that is black, that is white. Why would I mushmalt up and call it gray? You know, I know
gray
how...
gray comes in every shade in between, so no, there's no gray. I need right, wrong, left, right, up, down. Come on. But life doesn't work that way. And most normal people, and I say normal because we're going to call, I'm finger quoting normal as the majority of folks, not necessarily that there's, you know, any kind of socio-normative crap going on now because we're not getting all whatever. But they process things on that sliding scale of right and wrong. And not for nothing, I am all Superman. I am all good all the time. We will not discuss Man of Steel. It is off the table. But I all good all the time. And so that is how I process things. And that is hard on people. I am hard on people because it takes a lot for me to forgive somebody, because if I am honest with you and I am telling you where my boundaries are, what I expect from you, which is only honesty, and Rack can attest to this. There have been people in my life that I have absolutely adored. Okay. People, like, we're all drawn to certain people, and through our lives, we will find our spirit families and people that are, you know, we least expect. So I found one of these people, amazing, amazing, amazing person. Love him to death. Absolutely do. But they did not mesh well with my truth. Nobody knows what. It doesn't matter how good a person is. A, nobody wants to see their own reflection. And then I tend to be like, you know, that's about as mean as I ever get. Is if somebody's going to say whatever, pull something out of their butt, do whatever, say whatever, lash out at me, and I can take it because I can. I have been trained in my life. You need to spit some vitriol here. My got thick skin, landed on me, and then we'll discuss your bad day, and then you apologize, and we're good, which is unfortunate, you know. But sometimes people just need to vent, and sometimes you need to let them. However, when I can't take it anymore, or when it shoots daggers at me and I don't feel like I deserve it, I will sit there and be like, yeah, well, I thought you said A, B, C, and D, but then you did, you know, X, Y, Z over this way. But then I'm the a-hole because I'm talking out of my butt, but it's truth. And eventually they see that. And that is a hard thing. It is a very hard thing for people to do, for people to experience, especially when they're so good at not looking at themselves in the mirror, when they're so good at putting this front on that they've worn it for so long that they do not realize that their plasticine smile has lost its shine. And that's unfortunate, but that I digress. Okay. So back to a broken heart and love. What happens when it's, whether it's your kid, your sibling, your parent, a romantic relationship, what happens when the people that you trust most or the people that you love most break you? And it's not necessarily a break in full trust, but they do things like that damn pizza. If any of y'all have read my poetry, it comes up several times. It's because it's these little things that can mean everything. But you have to weigh it. You have to weigh the good against the bad. And I want to always err on the side of good. So what happens then when you err on the side of good, when you want to believe the best, when you know who these people are, it's why you love them, and life turns them into somebody you don't recognize? Is that on you or is that on them? Do you grow through it and leave them behind, or do you stay where you are and help them rise back to where they were and move forward together? Neither of those is easy, and all of them make you feel like you're batshit freaking crazy, because none of it makes sense, because the heart isn't a logical being. And I say that because it makes us do stupid things outside of our head, so we'll just call it, you know, devil's advocate, the bane of my existence, my emotions hate me, it's fine. So any thoughts? Because I am long-winded.
Well, since you've given us your opinion, no. I think that you have to leave room to be broken at various points in a relationship, because somebody's always going to break you at some point. There's always going to be disappointment. There's always going to be shame. There's always going to be something. It's at what level of breaking does the pain become so great that you make a change? Is it a small change? Is it a big change? Is it a so broken you never go back change? So there's always these little things that happen throughout relationship and love that, you know, there's going to be different levels of hurt and break. And especially if you're with somebody for so long, that you're going to grow and you're going to say, wait a minute, that's not acceptable, or I've grown out of that, or I've changed, or that's not the way I feel anymore, or things like that. But I have, like you have pepperoni, I have coconut. I don't know how many times I've told, you know, I like coconut, but he'll go and get coconut, like an almond joy or something. I'm like, oh, can I have a piece of that? But you don't like coconut. Why do we have this argument every time? I like coconut. Are you sure? Why are you asking me if I'm sure? I know what I like, and I don't know what it is. And I've gotten to the point where I'm so sarcastic. No, that's your other friend, not me. That's your other friend. But so I think,
like, wrong girl. I said that to my husband many times. He's like, that's not funny.
Exactly, and that's what. So the point is, am I being so sarcastic that I'm pissing him off, so I'm making a mountain out of a molehill because coconut just doesn't register? It's not that big of a deal. Or is it because I told you? Why do you forget something so damn simple? Because in my perception is, if you're going to forget something that simple, what are you really forgetting about me? Why is that? You know, it's so again, it's how we register that information or how we receive
exactly.
it, and why is it bothering us so much? But then you have the bigger things, the bigger trust issues. Why weren't you there when I was sick? Why weren't you there when I needed you the most? Why were you so afraid of what I was going through that you left me? Why couldn't you handle it?
Why do I have to be strong for you when I'm the one in pain?
Right.
Why can't you pick the socks up?
Yeah, you know. There are things like, you know, things like that, but you have, sometimes they look at in the mirror at what you're going through and they're so afraid of what you're going through, they run away from you. So whose fault is that? Is that yours? Was that theirs? Or should you have been able to support that?
Do you want to answer?
No, I'm being rhetorical. Or are you supposed to understand that later? Or are you supposed? I mean, there are so many levels of this degree. Are you afraid? Like, I know when I came out of my open heart surgery, it literally was. I thought you were going to die. So I feared and I made wrong choices, or I didn't make wrong choices, or you know, there are things I've seen people do and I've heard people do. So where does all that lie in the psyche of the brain? It's all
everywhere all at once.
Yeah.
Because we, at every change in the status quo of any relationship, whether it's friendship, whether it's, you know, your partner, whatever it is, at every shift in the foundation of that relationship, it's a mourning process. You have to mourn what was and be willing to rebuild and be stronger and in order to be able to stand tall enough to move forward. And it's a process that sucks the big wazoo. It really, really does. But about that mountain and molehill, if you pile up enough grains of sand and you cry enough tears, it's going to build and build and build. So this little molehill will eventually, left unchecked, become that mountain that you can't climb over because it becomes this jagged, painful, impacted thing that is only in our own way. Because those that do it flippantly, like they don't, like it doesn't register to them. Like they're not doing it to them. Like they honestly believe, well, I could have sworn. I will say this. When it came to my husband, he remembered pepperoni pizza. He did not remember that I didn't like pepperoni pizza, just that we talk all the time about pepperoni pizza. And so because pepperoni pizza was what was important in the way he remembered it, he kept on getting the pepperoni pizza. So he didn't get it to be the a-hole, you know. But the way I work, if somebody says no, it's no. That, you know, write that crap down, no pepperonis on her pizza. And so that fundamental difference in how we maintain information became a decade and a half of me thinking he's passive aggressive and me feeling hurt and unseen and invisible and unimportant. because how many times do you have to say it? You know, how many times do you have to remind them? Because if it's nothing to them, and but it's something to you, because after all that time it feels like something, then it's very easy to feel like you're nothing to them. That's not always true. I mean, I'm sure sometimes it's true, but it's not. You have to, you know, do the work to dig into where their perception of things is, where their reality is, how they classify and prioritize information. Because you're like me. If we love you, if you're our kids, our family, our closest friends, we tend to try to remember things. We tend to preemptively do things so that they suffer less or they don't have to hurt alone or whatever it is. And we do that, one, because we love them, but two, because nobody does that for us. We treat others, and this, you know, like across the board, we tend to treat others like we want to be treated. And when somebody's love language doesn't feel like love, like if it's grating at a certain time, can I throw you under the bus, Rack, for 2 seconds? I love you.
Go ahead.
Okay. You deflect with humor, and that is all well and good, and they can pull me right out of my own butt if I am just stuck up there on something stupid, but sometimes I need to suffer through it a little bit. And you know, I've had conversations with you. I'm like, it's not today. I can't take it today. But if I don't say that to you, and you're like, okay, understood, because it's not an offensive thing. It is not meant to be hurtful. I'm not saying do not shower me with your love language. What I'm saying is I cannot receive that right now. I am not ready. And it is a hard thing to have to spell out for people, knowing that it can make them uncomfortable or hurt their feelings. But it took me a lifetime of suffering through people not seeing what I needed, even though I could see what they needed. You know what I mean? And it's very easy, and I still do it because not for nothing, if I want to be all gluttonous in my my phone just did something weird, and I don't know what the heck that was. If I want to be all gluttonous and bask and wallow in my own sadness, I'm really good at that. It takes a lot to pull me out of that because I need to feel it to process it. You know, it took me till I was, you know, fully grown with 4 children before I fully understood that people do not process that way. Most people will only absorb it, you know, certain layers of the skin and not all the way to the core, because it's too painful, and they'll absorb it little bit by little bit and process it out bit by bit. To me, that sounds like sanity. I'm a little insane. So I would rather process the pain all at once and, well, for the most part, breathe through it, go through worst-case scenarios, and then take a deep breath and move the F on, because I don't know how not to feel it, and it will poison everything. I know from experience if I just let it sit. Now, we have a caller. One moment, please. Hello, 903, who's on the line?
Hello, this is Little Gary. I was calling in.
Hi, Gary, how are you?
I'm pretty good, how are you?
I am good. We are talking about love, Lauren, being foolish, and how people just don't understand how we speak.
Holy crap, man. Well, I'm the preacher of that.
So, you know, today's topic is just the fool, and we're talking about being love-lorn and missing cues with people and being hurt and being, you know, validly hurt even if we are misunderstood and things like that. So what are your thoughts on,
first say hello to Kate, and say hello to Rat. So everybody says. Everybody got to take a shot first, for sure, before I get into this. I've been a fool. I've been a fool so many times. Love makes me so weak because I will try. I'm a Leo. I'll never let go, and I will try and try and try to make it work way past they've done quit. So, I'm right in the middle of it right now. believe it or not. But, yeah, I just, you know, you just keep getting up every day, man. You just keep breathing one step at a time. And if they ain't the one, they ain't the one. And that's how I try to think about it. But I feel like a fool. I've lost my pride. There's a lot of things that's happened. And I keep on trucking and hoping for the best, you know. Either I'm gonna find what I'm looking for, or I'm gonna be a mean ass old man at a nursing home somewhere.
Get off my lawn.
Oh, you know both, because they're not mutually exclusive. But you said something, Gary. You said if they ain't the one, they ain't the one. Now here is the thing: it is human nature when you connect with somebody, even just a little bit, you want that to grow because it feels good to be understood on some level. So you want that to grow. You want that to be. To be seedlings and sprout into, you know, a grand oak tree. So at what point do we fight against ourselves or realize that it doesn't matter that we love them? It shouldn't be a fight every day. Now, this is I'm talking more, you know, a year or so into it when all the honeymoon phases are over and you're, you know, and you watch them, you know, pick their teeth with one hand and scratch their butt with the other and all of that stuff that you need to work through. Can I live with that, looking at that every day? Because believe it or not, some people can't. I almost, me and mine cannot share toothpaste because this is how petty I am. We cannot share toothpaste because that man squeezes from the freaking middle. I don't understand it. I cannot. Don't touch my toothpaste. I roll from the bottom up. I can't. I just don't touch my toothpaste. And that keeps us sane. It avoids a fight. I don't care that his toothpaste is a mess. That's not true. I will squeeze it from the bottom every chance I get. But I don't care that he does it because he's not touching my toothpaste. So mine is still pristine. And I am okay with that. You do what you've got to do. It wasn't worth the fight, and it wasn't, you know, it's an easy fix, you know. But not everything is such an easy fix. So, you know, it's different if you have a lifetime with somebody and then people get old and stupid, and then you're like, all right, we need to you know, reorganize our shit, because sometimes that needs to happen. And there's nothing wrong with that because people grow, people change, life happens. We're not the same people we were 20 years ago. And that's all well and good. That to me is progress. That to me is making steps forward to want to still build that life together. But before you get to that, you know, 20 years into a relationship, there is a lot of, you know, 5 years or 2 years or however much time that is where those bonds start to grow really intensely, that you want to overlook the little things. You want to overlook those little petty nuances that drive you nuts. You want to believe the best and think that, well, that's not enough for me to not love them. But it's those little things that we overlook that when we've had enough on bigger issues we don't want to face, we use that to pick them apart. Like, if they scrape their teeth on their fork, because, ooh, no thank you. But, you know, these, it's interesting how we file things away in our card catalog in our minds to be able to use them as both coping mechanisms and, you know, escape hatches later on. So let's say hello to Miss Sky. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
How you doing?
I just woke up.
I am. Oh, well, there you go. Well, you should be all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I am very, very, very talkative because apparently I'm having anxiety and it's coming out of my mouth. So enjoy that. So we have Gary and Sweet and Rack on the phone. Say hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Hello, hello.
So hello, we darling. Are 40 minutes in, and I want to get... I want to get your views, Sky, on what you think about being a fool in love, or how pain or love skews pain and makes you stay in a situation that may not be the best, or do you fight through it? Like, give me your thoughts. Nothing like, you know, just putting you right up there under the bus like it did with Rack.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. In my personal experience, I feel like it's always in retrospect that I see everything clearly. I'm not very good at seeing things while they're happening for what they are. And sometimes, well, all the time, it kind of takes till I have a back seat in it And I might say, oh, yeah, I was really, you know, I wasn't looking at things the way that they are, or I trusted way too easily, or, you know, there's a lot going on, or, you know, I feel a lot better. I feel a lot healthier now that I have some distance. And then also with there's also good with that as well. Not everything's terrible, but, you know, you can still appreciate the good points and the things that, I always feel like I learned something from every relationship. Like, yeah, well, this is good and this is bad, and I probably don't want to do that again. But often it's retrospect for me in my experience. So,
because you see the best in people, they are not their worst day, and that is a beautiful thing. Beautiful, beautiful thing. So I have Rack on the board because 40 minutes in, you might as well read a poem. Sweet Pea, would you read him for me?
I certainly will.
Thank you.
Not a problem. Give me a half a second. I've got to walk past Amadeus.
Yeah.
He is, sorry. He's like bothering me under my desk, so. Okay. Mr. Raconteur. Fool by Raconteur. I'm an idiot, living an empty life, writing in verse about my heartbreak and strife. If one person tells me I'm special or hope you find what you're looking for, I'll probably puke before slamming the door. Platitudes don't sustain me. Grieving is pointless because I honestly tried. If I'm lucky, I'll drown in the tears that I've cried. For the briefest of moments, we had a good time. I was a fool to believe your heart could ever be mine. Lock me up, at least I try again. My reach exceeds my grasp, and Cupid's a comedian and poem.
Isn't he, though? Cupid, little tiny cherub with that farcical arrow. I am an idiot. This I am very familiar with, you know, and it's when you have been dragged through, you know, the muck, just trying to hold on to someone's heart or hoping they hold on to yours before they want to stomp it into the ground, you know, they're like, oh, it's not you, it's me. Oh, you know, you're a wonderful person. Really? I'm so wonderful. You can't get away from me fast enough. Really? Really? Because I believe you. And it feels like crap. And this is the verse that says, platitudes don't sustain me. Grieving is pointless. I mean, how over it do you have to be that numb? And that is painful. You know, it's enough pain that it sears your nerve ending shut for a while until you know, time gives you that you know, latitude to be able to look at it if you so choose. So very, very understandable, very relatable piece. So Sweet Pea, you read it. What are your thoughts?
Oh, are you a fool for her trying to be in love? No. I think to not try love is foolish. To be played a fool is mean. So I don't think that you're the fool. I think they're the fools. I don't think those that are in love are fools. I think those that are treated poorly, the people that treat them are fools. They're mean or narcissistic, and I think those are the foolish people. It's just we feel like it. I just can't stand that you ever feel like you're a fool, my darling. But I love the line, I hope you find what you're looking for. I'll probably puke before slamming the door. I hope that means you're actually going to puke on them. That's what I
just
hope.
Just desserts.
Yes.
And Gary, what are your thoughts?
I am so glad you asked me that. My favorite line of total of all and Cupid's a comedian. Man, I feel this thing, and I always love the things that I write that mean something to me, that people say, man, I've been there, I feel that, and it makes you feel not alone, and I feel a lot of these things, as sad as it may seem, you know, that you got to be honest in how you feel, and I feel this right here, man. I don't know if it's because of my situation now or what, but excellent. It's what I would strive to be as a poet, to write something like this. This is poetry, you know. What I write is rhymy and lyrically, but this is real poetry that is heartfelt, and I understand it. Amazing. I'm so glad you asked me for a comment, because this is amazing. Keep as a comedian, wow. I'll never forget that.
There you go. And Sky, your thoughts?
I thought it was said wonderfully, and right from the beginning, I like how you go into writing the verse about my heartbreak and strife, and I think as writers, we all know that heartache is like the best syrup for our muse, right? I think even after years of space between heartaches, sometimes it's easy to kind of go back into that place and feel those feelings as if they're very present, even if you've kind of put them away and gotten over them. But as writers, we have this gift, if you will, to relive those and write it on paper, or write it on paper as it happened, and then lo and behold, it's everybody's favorite poem, and you're reading it, feeling all over again. So I love that you put that in there, because it's really true. And then, of course, right in the second stanza, that bitterness, that unbelief, that no, there is no hope. I'm skeptical on that they'll ever be any good that's going to come out of giving your heart away because of what had happened, because of the damage that's there. So, I mean, there's just like an array of emotion that people go through, especially when you're, grieving is pointless because they've honestly tried, right? And at the end, that hopelessness, I think that's that lowest point where you're just like, well, there's no point in even trying, and all hope is lost, and that's very devastating. Very well done. I'm sure this is in the Hurt Locker. I'm on my phone, so I'll scroll down. Yeah, it's the Hurt Locker. Very well done.
Awesomeness. You see, you're very relatable, Mr. Rack. Very, very relatable. I mean, there is something to be said about getting through that kind of devastation, because it changes people, you know? When you are destroyed, it changes you. Even when you heal, it's a little rocky, it's a little less trusting, a little more broken, a little bit more cynical, a lot more skeptical. You're not the same person. And if you can get through that and find somebody that can elevate your emotions to look past that kind of rough exterior that pain leaves behind, it is scary to be that vulnerable, because not for nothing, happiness drops the bottom out of you. And not that you don't want to be there, that you don't want to strive to be happy. It's just that's where the vulnerability is. The pain doesn't let you down. Pain sucks. Pain's going to hurt. There's always the likelihood and the possibility that is very, very, very consistent. But if you allow yourself to feel joy, that is a much higher place to fall from. And it's scary. And so pain like this that leaves you numb changes us. You know, it just does. And I have one of my poems on the board. I picked a bunch of them for today, so who knows if I'll read more than this. It might be nice if I can find a group, because I just lost my place fully. Here we go. Okay. This is, it is on the board. Let me know when y'all see it.
I got it.
Okay. This is a word to the wise. I am that fool. And it goes like this. They told me it takes time, but there are no words strong enough to circumvent truth, strong enough to break me into pieces that don't recognize you. Before the sound of your voice, before I saw your face, I was called in golden starlight to a certain place in time, captivated by an intelligence that bore through my logic, building fires to warm my soul. A house is not a home. A home isn't just a location, and you are the only place I feel safe enough to rest, and boy, am I weary. Speak in tongues to my mental anguish, contemplating anxiety like it's calculus, and I've never excelled in mathematics, but verbal acrobatics, sing spirit songs and beautiful words that peel the protective coating off my pain. My scars laid bare, and I, unafraid, let you graze them with the love that lingers in warm kisses. Emancipated from cell blocks locked and loaded, always waiting for a riot that never came, but hurricane preparedness saved lives, and I wasn't ready to die yet. Your skin on my skin made stars from dust and sense out of a life that always felt less than. By your side, there is nothing more. There is no less than. There is only love. It seeps into my being beneath every breath, hidden in light particles that dance with my shadow, where even our demons ascend into the only peace that has ever existed. It takes time, they said. Since when do the foolish heed warnings? Since when does wisdom beat fate? Baby, I am ever the fool that takes but a moment to know there are no words strong enough to circumvent the truth, strong enough to break me into pieces that don't recognize you. End poem.
Damn. I cannot even pick one stanza out of here that doesn't make me want to shiver. From speaking in tongues to the sound of your voice to the home is not a home to emancipate it from cell blocks. I mean, this is an essence of what should be and what shouldn't be. But your ending, it seeps into my being beneath every breath hidden in light particles that dance shadows, even when our demons ascend into the only peace that has ever existed. And then you go to tell him, there are not enough words strong enough to circumvent truth, strong enough to break me into pieces that don't recognize you. To be so wrapped up into someone, to know someone that well, that even if you broke me, that if you shattered me, every piece of me would still know you. I mean, that's love and pain so deeply that how you expressed it in words credits you as a poet. I mean, it's almost spiritual, Pretty Bird. I can barely express it myself, how deep that affects me. So I just reading it makes me literally gave me chills. So that's just beautiful. Raconteur, your thoughts?
You know, you touch on to me what's the core of a relationship, and it's kind of the repeating theme about you being a fool. The only people that can hurt you are the ones that you care about, the ones that you love, and you know that. You know, in a sense, in a large sense, is knowing somebody, and you know, knowing who they are, and that feeling of being known to them, or not being recognized, you know, being accused of not being understood, is what makes you feel like such a fool, because, you know, you're trusting them, you're allowing yourself to be vulnerable, and they're completely, like, you know, eclipsing it and overlooking it. Again, you mentioned the language that you use. Was it you don't know calculus, but you do, you know, verbal acrobatics? That's relatable. especially to somebody that likes to use humor as a shield to deflect things, because, you know, some people will rely on you know, the literal that people say or do to kind of, like, you know, get out of things. It's like, well, that's not what you said. Well, you know, that's kind of, you know what I was trying to say, or you know what I meant, and then it turns into a whole different argument. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you're still, you're laying there vulnerable and hurt, and that's more the point, you know. And I mean, kind of sum it up as, you know, well, if it matters to you, if it matters to me, it should matter to you, and that's what you're missing. You know, you say it in the most beautiful and painful of ways. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Gary, your thoughts.
I was so hoping you would say, and Gary, your thoughts. I've got, right off the bat, super, super deep. Very deep was my first thought. The second thought was, gosh, I hope one time in my life somebody thinks about me in the way that is described. Like, man, God, it must be nice. That must be what, you know, true love is, when two people feel the same way, that way, man. It's so deep and professional and a lot of thought, you know what I mean? Like, you can tell you've been through something and all of these. I can relate to it, as I've felt that strong of love towards somebody, but I can't relate that I've ever felt that in return, and that is what we're all searching for and what we feel a fool about when we give our all and we don't get it in return. And amen to that. You know, I live that. I'm going to be 48 years old, and I'm scared that I won't find that kind of love. And it's awesome. Blew me away. Amazing. That's why I call in and listen to y'all's great stuff. It really hits home. Thank you so much.
And Sky, my darling.
And so when I shamelessly give people your SoundCloud links, this is why. No, your words are always moving. The emotion and the way that you put metaphor into things, I really, I just absolutely love it. I love that you chose to envelope that opening stanza, or after the two lines, that opening stanza, because the framework of it, when you, like that first stanza, that it's just a wonderful brevity in itself. There's so much said there. It kind of takes the breath away. So I love that you come back to it at the end. I think it's beautiful how you do that. And, of course, throughout the whole piece, there are so many things. I especially liked the universe theme that you had throughout the song. Throughout the song, I say the poem, when you talk about, you know, I was called in golden starlight, and then you go down and you go forward with that, with make stars from dust, and sense of what life had always felt less than, and you continue to use this metaphor throughout, and I really love that you leaned into that and that you embraced it, because it was just such a beautiful metaphor, and the way that you kind of gave the smaller metaphors to give to that larger one. And when you love someone, it is like the universe. So I really enjoyed that part of it. And then, of course, there were all the other parts of it, like Raconteur kind of gave a little nod to the math thing. I thought that was quite brilliant. And I mean, just the emotion throughout, I thought it was absolutely beautiful. And the fact that, you know, with anything, people tend to put a time on things. And I think I said it earlier, sometimes there is no time limit on emotion. There isn't, this is how it is, and then you're going to get over it. Because even when you do heal, it's so easy to go back to that, in your words, that skin of unhealing. And also, this poem is also about already being hurt and then taking that leap. And I mean, there was a part about the skin again, which I really enjoyed as well. And I don't know quite where it is, but you talk about how the skin was already, it was already sitting and taking down those walls and loving this person anyway, even though there was fear and there was damage already there prior, and then having to deal with that over again. And I think that brings a whole other aspect into it as well. Really well done.
Thanks. Yeah, there's something to be said for being in a place where you can show somebody exactly where you were hurt and they kind of hold your pieces together. But then what happens when you love them that way? When you see all of the worst parts of themselves, all the things that they hate, and you love them anyway, and to you it's beautiful, and they still leave. How does that then not feel like you're the idiot? Like, you're stupid enough to love them knowing that they were already broken, even though you believe that they love you knowing that you were broken, you know? It is a hard place to be, to love somebody, anybody, whether they're friends or family or whatever. It is a hard thing to love somebody entirely, knowing that there are no promises, that they can only love you the best they know how, and nobody loves the same way. You know, we love in ways that are tempered by experience. Life changes that kind of awe and wonder that love is when it's all joy when you're a little kid, and we can only feel through our scars, and not everybody lays themselves open, bleeding out, just to be naked enough to feel everything. That is not a comfortable place. That is not an easy place to be. Not my favorite part of my personality either, and because it opens you up for a lot of pain. But if you love somebody that much, and they leave anyway, you know, after all the promises, how do you not feel like the fool? How do you not feel like a fool for not being able to stop loving them? You may not speak to them. You may never speak to them. But that doesn't go away. And then you feel like an idiot because what in the actual F? Because if I was giving my, like any of my loved ones advice, being like, well, if they did A, B, C, and D, you know, and it kind of destroys you on these levels, you know, you have to be able to allow yourself time to heal and then decide whether or not you're going to move forward this way or be like, F you. You know, options, options, options. But for my own personal self, because I'm a big-ass hypocrite, there are no options. I have no options. I have this happened. This is on, you know, they're obviously going through something because I don't know this person to destroy people on purpose. They're going through something, and I can't fault somebody for feeling some kind of way about something they don't want to talk to me about. But I can't trust somebody who can destroy me. So the love doesn't go anywhere. It stays raw and open because I don't know how not to do that. So I am ever the fool because it makes no logical sense. You know, there's nothing over that. I can jump the gap. You know, I can pretend it doesn't exist. I can pretend that's not a giant crevasse right there up my center. Poor choice of words, but you know what I mean. And so I leaned the conversation sideways. Sweet, you were on the board.
All right.
Hey, you know what the best thing about this is that it's a low, low spot, and listening to everybody, you don't feel as alone because we've all been there. And that's what I took, just listening to y'all talk and how I feel of being a fool and stuff and y'all's experiences. That's a good thing about writing, I think, is the connection that tonight that I am alone and, you know, I feel like a fool for somebody I love. I don't feel alone because I'm not the only one that's felt this way. There's a lot of cool people like us out there that's felt this way. So thank you for that. Sorry for interrupting.
No,
you're
not
perfectly fine. And here's the thing I want to put out there. Even though I chose the topic and, you know, I'm just a fool because that's what it feels like, there is never a point in time that I will believe emotions are not valid. If you feel some kind of way, you are entitled to feel some kind of way, even if the people around you don't know why you feel that way. They don't have to know why you feel that way. Your experiences are your own experiences. All you can do is explain to the best of your ability, this hurt me. Even if you don't know why it hurt me, this hurt me, and I need time to heal. And in order for you to help me heal, this is what I need from you. And that's the most open conversation you can have. But whether you feel like you're crazy or they make you feel like you're crazy, because sometimes that happens, but whatever it is, whatever that pain is, it is valid and not for nothing. That is absolutely fuel for all creative arts. It is whatever you want to pour your soul into in any kind of way. That's what feeds it, the joy, the pain, the anger, the things that you want to, you know, hold in because, you know, polite society, and the things that you want to scream at the top of your lungs, which, you know, we tend to not do even in exuberance because, you know, lest the entire world look at us because we can't have that. And so, you know, it's valid. Your feelings are always valid. You feel some kind of way because you were made to feel some kind of way. You process things and emotions happen, and emotions are irrational and they are all valid. So I just had to say that. Go ahead, sweet. You're on.
Okay. this is lost in his smile. The fragrance of French roast and cigarette smoke still linger in my memories. On the night when our eyes collided between giggles and desires. Sins are sainted in stages of black velvet sensuality as waxen fingers skim the complexions of new complications. A free spirit flows in bonds of trust. A completion unfolds. I lie safe between your collarbone and ribcage. Enemies had no chance to attack with your hand on the small of my back. I love you flowed between us. We were Saturday night dinners and nudie date snuggles, wrapped in sleep and Sunday morning smiles. Laughter began to fade as dark days strained our normal. I folded into your arms, double dosing on your strength, greedy without shame. I became a monster that you feared. Layered in malice, sprinkled in wasted times of forgotten loyalties, loveless with a smile, pretentious and warm, betrayal of trust lent itself to be open. The vulgarities of opportunities. Tear-stained pillows tell lies and silent codes of vulnerability. When the fog of pain lifted, I felt the shadow of another linger in the corners of a crumbling relationship. Battles and insecurity created poor choices and foolish beliefs of false necessities, beheading trust at the guillotine of lost hope. Words of truth poured from his heart of sorrow over memes of kittens with rings as false promises and games played like a child pissing his pants too weak to speak truth to his lie, still craving the narcissistic pacifier she provides. For us, there is no more ticking of time, no more cat and mouse chase. I lost it all to his fears, and the truth is clear. We are lovers by fate, but I'm already dead. I bled out, my dear, and poem.
You kill me, woman. From the very first line that has a special and unfortunate meaning for me. between, you know, that coffee and cigarettes, it is a time stamp of unfortunate past. But there's something to be said about the way you paint a moment and a story and snapshots of joy and love when our eyes collided between giggles and desires, because as a grown woman, now as a teenager, I mean, it is what it is, but as a grown woman, it is much fewer and farther between to have somebody lock eyes with you from across the room and make you blush. And it is a beautiful, beautiful thing to feel that flush, to feel your cheeks just fill with blood, to smile and look away. And it's not a coy thing. Sometimes it's the magnitude of it is undeniable. And I love how it starts there. It starts with that kind of collision. Sins are sainted and states. And you know what? That is just lovely. But here, I lay safe between your collarbone and rib cage. And there is something about that spot. It is wonderfully comfortable. And there are no worries there. The rest of the world falls away and you can just exist. And in a world of instant gratification and 20-second reels and everything is like flash mob mentality of nonsense, those quiet moments where the world falls away, those are kind of those moments are what peace feels like, you know, what love feels like. I love that you have those weekends, those lazy Sunday mornings. It is beautiful. I folded into your arms, double dosing on your strength, greedy without shame. I became the monster that you feared. And here's the thing about that. When we doubt, when we worry, when things shift and nobody offers an explanation and you're almost afraid to ask, when the perception of it shifts, even if nothing changed, it can turn us into things we never thought we were, things we never defined ourselves as. As a strong woman, well, I guess a strong person in general, but I can only speak for myself. And so as a strong woman, it takes a lot to ask for help. It takes a lot to tell someone you need them, especially just to be there, because most people are like, hey, can you come here for a second? And I need you for something, and they blow it off like it's nothing. But when a strong, strong woman asks for that little bit of help, it's not nothing, it's everything, and it doesn't look like that to anybody else. So when we're grasping and grappling and we're breaking our nails bloody to hold on to everything that is good, sometimes we can't even see beyond that, and sometimes that's the only focus. And not for nothing, if we feel needy and we hate that about ourselves, we can't imagine anybody else is going to find that even remotely attractive. And that's what that says to me. And it's absolutely, absolutely valid. And in that place of fear comes broken trust, comes I need you and you're giving your time to somebody else. I don't care if it's an office wife, I hate that freaking term because F that. I don't care. To be honest, I don't care if it's their best friend. I don't care if it's their mother. I don't care if it's their sister, their brother, a stranger on the street. If I am asking you for time, for fuck's sake, give me some time. Don't give it to somebody else. Don't be like, well, I needed a second to breathe. That's what I need from you, and you're giving it away. And they don't ever see that. And it's a hard place to be. Because how do you describe something that used to be simple, that didn't need words? How do you now have to go back to kindergarten alphabets of love when you, did I say alphabets? Alphabets. It's not a cereal. And it feels like you're trying to make bricks out of sand and there's no moisture to hold it together. It's like, what happened to it all? And it could very well be that nothing has changed except where you're looking in the room. But because of that, it colors everything. And because of that shift, it colors everything else. And then that rift just grows and grows and grows. And people forget how to talk to each other because it sucks to be like, I need you, when they haven't been there. I have only ever truly, oh, I'm going to cry. Ooh. I've been fighting it. I'm moving. I have only ever truly needed to my core one person. And they destroyed me twice because I was an idiot enough to think that they were who they were to begin with. But when there's enough pain that you don't have an escape but to hurt somebody, they're not going to be that same person, and you're not going to be that same person. And you have to start to understand that not losing sight of that, but not letting that be the goal. We don't want to backtrack into who we were, even though that was happy. We need to rebuild into who we're going to be and let that be stronger and grow infinitely better. And that transition is the most painful transition of all. And in my opinion, and feel free to differ, it is harder to do that than it is to lose somebody. It is harder to do that than to mourn the death of a loved one, because that is finite. That is what it is, and that cannot change. It will suck, and time will help that suck less often. Not less, but less often. But when they are there, when the person your soul is attached to detaches itself, it leaves holes. And if you can't fix it together, sometimes you don't want to, because why should you have to work so damn hard? Why shouldn't it be like this? It used to be easy. Well, you know what? That's not going to get anybody anywhere. It is not easy. It sucks. This happened, that happened, this reason, that reason, no reason, all the reasons. You have to make it. But all that pain makes you bundle up like a burrito, and you've already seen me. You know, don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me. This isn't who I am. And it is hard on everybody. And your poem breaks me. It just breaks me. And it's beautiful when words can pull you into places like that. The end of this, I lost it to all his fears, and the truth is clear. We are lovers by fate, but I'm already dead. I bled out, my dear. And that breaks me, because that I have been, for a lot of my life, invisible in a room full of people, if you can believe that with my big boisterous self, and nobody notices, because, you know, in that infinite strength, in being able to help everybody else, people don't think that you ever need help. If you're so strong that you can do for everybody else, you don't need anybody to do for you, then they feel useless, and you're alone and vulnerable and naked and bleeding and unseen. And it's very easy to blame them for putting you in that position. It's very easy to not be able to heal, because it's hard to heal in the dark. But it's nobody's fault, and everybody's fear of being that vulnerable, to walk out in the light, bloody and naked, to force them to see what they did that they don't want to see, and it's a hard thing to get through. And your poem breaks me, and it is gorgeous.
Thank you.
So, Sky, you're very welcome. I mean, I'm very long-winded tonight. I am just saying, in case you hadn't noticed, I'm a talker. So Sky, your thoughts. Sky, are you muted?
Yeah, of course I'm muted. Sorry. just complaining about having to go after that comment. This is absolutely gorgeous. And right from the beginning, when you start in the details with the smells, and I don't know, smells just linger in memory, and it's almost like you never want to smell that smell again of something that reminds you of something that was once so dear to you and now is lost. It's like you just trigger so many thoughts. So I love that you brought the smells in there. And then there was such like a soft, inviting tone in your sharing of memories within the piece where I lay safe between your collarbone and ribcage. And then I love you flowed between us. And then even you go from that like very intimate thing to we were Saturday night dinners and movie date snuggles, and it may seem like a more lighthearted statement to say, well, we were Saturday dinners, but when you get into routines like that, it's those routines that stick with you. It's those small things that you do daily that are hard to escape from when they're no longer there. So your poem really brings in the reader to a space where they're kind of vulnerable, and then you kind of take the mat out from underneath them to kind of replicate that feeling of loss, and then down to, you know, the tear-stained pillows and the vulnerability. There's another part they really wanted to point out. This part right here. And then I fold into your arms, double dosing your strength. I thought that was brilliant because a lot of times when we feel like we're losing something, we hold on tighter. And in that holding on, we are frantic, I think, at least I know from, and we can't really see things for how they are. We're just trying to hold on to what we want and not really thinking about, well, is this healthy or, you know, is this where is this going to end up? We're just so engrossed in that emotion. And then there was another part. I mean, the whole thing was wonderful. But there was another part that, that right here, that is rage and insecurity create the poor choices. And that kind of goes along what I had said. And I thought this was wonderfully done. And like I said, the way that you kind of set it up, kind of inviting the reader in these soft notes and then tearing them down as if the relationship was in itself was. I thought it was really devastatingly beautiful. Well done.
Thank you very much.
I concur. And Rafferty, what are your thoughts?
You know, there's a progression to this, that the journey that you take us on, you felt that it was too long. At one point you had mentioned to me, but you know, it really, that there's a lot that you're leaving to us that you're not, telling, but you are telling, you know, there's a point where it starts and then it builds. And, you know, you're giving us little details, but these little details are the things that meant so much. And, you know, it answers a question that a lot of people, you know, that they wonder, you know, that they say, you know, there had to be something there once. And that's what you're kind of filling in. There's those moments that you get entangled, that you fall in love, that you make yourself vulnerable, that you commit yourself to this relationship, and that's the detail that you give us makes the falling apart that much more painful. Because of those moments that you allow yourself the emotion that you know, I feel safe, I felt this way and I committed to this and you know, I got involved and allowed myself to be, you know, vulnerable, and then you kind of had the rug yanked out from under you. And whether it's that, you know, you became something that you know, you weren't, you became the monster or, you know, the situation changed. The point is, you know, people grow. Sometimes they just grow apart instead of together. And that's the thing that escapes some people. And that's kind of what you're highlighting in this is, you know, people grew in different directions. And, you know, that's what killed you, because, you know, you committed to it and allowed yourself to be overtaken by it. And then it turned into something different. And, you know, that killed you. It was a beautiful piece, sweet.
Thank you very much.
And Gary, your thoughts?
Oh, wow. Well, what's left to say? Oh, my God. Man, yes, totally. The last comment, the ride is what I was thinking at first. Like, I feel like I've been through a lot of a journey since then. What is in my mind, I don't know if y'all do that too, whenever you got a comment in your head, and then by the time you hear other people's comments, and then you're like, dang, now I got this new comment, and so on and so forth. And the journey, but the feel of the pain that it took me on, and I shit y'all not, man. A week, maybe 2 weeks ago, my girlfriend of the time, 7 years, she gets a camper from her folks, moves to a camper place, calls me a couple of days later crying, please come and fix this plumbing leak and this electric problem and the battery problem, and I've learned more about campers than I ever wanted to know. I go in, I fix all of this stuff, and so I have my, I call in sick to work, keeping my grandkids. A couple of days later, she comes to get the rest of her stuff from my home. She wanted to see the kids. She was late coming over here, and I said, hey, will you pay me back for the favor? Will you drive us on the other side of town to drop them off with my daughter? She said, I've been helping you for 7 years. Just broke my heart. Had to meet my daughter on this out of town and all that messiness. And, oh, my God. You know what I mean? And it's just one thing and another. And I just feel that ride, that pain, you know. Definitely not alone. Working at my friend's house, she comes over there the last day. I'm building a shower side job, ceramic. This is like yesterday. And comes over there and says, oh, I got something to tell you. And it's all this stuff, and you just won't believe. And comes over there just to cuss me out and tell me how piece of crap I am and all of this mess. And said, now you lose. Watch me walk away. And just broke my heart again, you know. And so, God, you know, I feel this. What a crazy show y'all are having tonight. It's hitting home. I'm so glad I don't feel alone tonight. Thank y'all so much for having me and listening.
You're welcome. Don't do her any more favors because she ain't doing you none. I'm just, you know, that's my
mouth. Yeah, I keep on because I love, you know. She tells me, hey, I'm going to come over here and talk to you. Well, yeah, duh, you know, I'm going to get done working my butt off and sit and wait just to, for her to cuss me out. You know, she's a narcissist, kind of found out, for real. I didn't even know what it was until she called me once. I had to look it up. And so I'm trying to recover from that trauma bond crap. But anyway, thank you anyway.
I'm telling you. You're welcome. Let's say hello to AP Taylor. Hello, hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. How are you? We are talking about all things loving and foolish and, you know, all the things.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Do you have to read and run today, or can you hang out?
I probably do pretty bad. I'm actually working today. It's scary. I've worked for bloody ages. I'm getting tired. But anyway, I have to work. So you've got to get paid and all that stuff. It tends to be that way. But
It does.
It's really quite sad. But I do have a poem. I do have a poem, and it relates to a week ago, and the wonderful world of April the 1st.
Well, okay.
And I wrote a poem inspired by April the 1st and what my friend Kevin went and did. You ready?
Oh, my.
Ready for that?
Oh, I'm ready.
Here we go. This is It's a Matter of Trust, and it goes a little bit like this. I trusted all the people, but it ends up, you see, a church may have a steeple, but a camera too on a degree. And then onto Instagram, we're highlighted in shorts. One after another, bam, I'm preparing reports. When I took from a plate and sent that down the line, and during a great debate, instead snoring divine, took a few swigs too many of the holy wine, all available online, 20 swigs of stupid swine. Encouraged then comments, what, privacy be damned. Message the vicar he sent, solidly ethical, door slammed. So a church is now no more, but instead a place for a cheap laugh. And once the purpose is gone, you can't restore, there's a burger store. Wear a golden calf. In pomp.
Ain't that the truth? Oh, my goodness. You know, not to get into the beef because, no, but there's something to be said about a place where masses of people go to bare their souls. Whether anybody reads them or not is irrelevant. It's our sanctuary. It is a place that, you know, of deepest pain and deepest fear and deepest all the vulnerable things that should not be treated like nothing. That should not be held up and dealt out for ridicule. Yeah, that's unfortunate. And you were very classy in how you put that, by the way. And here I am trying not to bitch, but I can't help but talking. And so, well done, first of all. Way to
Thank
keep
you.
It classy and sassy. You are fabulous. And this, I'm going to nominate this for the front page. I am. I'm not evil. It's fine. And so, Sweet Pea, your thoughts?
Well, what can I say? But we're often drunk on stupid and the gluttony, you know. I'm so trying to be as PC and comfortable as I can, but I can't be. Well deserved. I just, you know, smirking on two-bit swine. I thought you were, your wordsmithing is spectacular. Your message is clear. I love the slamming of the door, solidly ethical door slammed. Obviously, it was hollow, and I hope there were splinters involved. What privacy be damned. I love that encompasses everything that happened right there. This is why we have so many priests going to prison. But I don't know. I can't say more than that. Otherwise, I'm just going to get myself outside the box of where we want to be. Lovely, AP. Absolutely lovely.
And Rackentor, your thoughts? Rack, sweetie, are you muted?
Rack. You muted, Rack.
Rackentor. Yeah, I will get back to you, Rack, so take your time. So, Sky, your thoughts?
I thought this was really well done, and I particularly enjoyed when you talk about the steeple, and it's just an angle of the camera, and it's such a small two lines, but it resonates. It makes you think of the pedestals that people put each other on, or that we see things in an obscured manner when we're in that euphoria of love. And then, you know, this person is bigger than life. And then when they're kind of that steeple, that angle of the camera, and with just a small adjustment of truth or lies exposed, how it can change so rapidly. And I really enjoyed that stance on that idea. And like I said, definitely the whole piece was wonderfully. And you go back to it and place instead for a cheap laugh, but once the purpose con can't restore. I think your woven humor, but very cutting, truth and deep sentiments within it are paired well. And congratulations on getting Pretty Bird to nominate you. Well deserved.
Thank you very much.
I am so glad that you can drop us by and bring us a little bit out of our brokenhearted blues that I just mired us in. So much appreciated.
Thank you. And thank you.
So you're going to run off now, babe? And by run off,
probably,
I don't mean to run off like into the woods, but you know.
Work, which is sad, but as I said, something's got to pay the bills pretty good.
Yeah, this is true. This, you know, adulting sucks sometimes. I feel you.
Well, he's been laying around for a week. It's about time.
Well, you know I'm going to say sweat. Anyway,
no, I'm glad you're feeling better. You can get up.
I'm back, which is good. So,
awesome.
Block Talk Radio's
awesome.
Back.
Glad.
How good's that?
I know. It only took them a week to get their stuff together.
I know. I mean, you know, some people say that, you know, 10 minutes is bad for, you know, websites being down.
That was a full-on 7 days.
Thing is 10 days, you know. get it back in 10 days, and oh, my God, they've done a wonderful job. And you think to yourself, holy shit, did I just say that? This is technology, for Christ's sake. You should be able to outsource this to Kazakhstan and have people who get the thing up and running in less than 10 hours, even with the time difference. But anyway, that's what it does.
Even there in the desert under those circumstances, they are faster than this place. That's hysterical.
That's what I mean.
You're awesome.
What would I know, Pretty Bird? I mean, you know, I mean, shit. It's a piece of bloody technology that was built 20 years ago. I mean, you ride it on the back.
Unplug it and plug it back in.
That's what I mean. I mean, Jesus, not that hard. God help me. Technology, it's not even technology 101. It's technology 22. You know, this is so damn simple. And they just can't get the fattening right. It's part of the biggest bloody channel in the world. They still can't do it. Bloody ridiculous.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you're killing
don't
me.
Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it. My show's not over.
Oh, God, you're killing me.
I'm going now after having said my piece.
Oh, you can say your piece anytime you want, AP. You're awesome.
Anytime.
You have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank
glad
you very much.
Better.
You too. Enjoy. Okay.
Bye. So we have Budo up on the board. And, you know, poor guy's been on the board waiting patiently because he's just fabulous. And he has a song for us. So let me know when you guys
so
have
excited.
Him open. I know, right? I am so excited, too. So excited. I did upload the update. So hopefully I did it right. And it's not some weird crap because I am a little bit mental and I sometimes don't even know what the heck I do. So here we did lose Gary. So hopefully he will call back. So, Gary, if you're listening, call back. And
call back, Gary.
We are going, right? We're going to listen to Bud.
Sunsets on our bedroom walls, but I can't let go that dream. That she will be coming back to my arms, she'll be. Uh-huh.
I probably should open with your song because that would have been lovely. I'm just putting that out there. Not that that has anything to do with anything. But where is it? The moon looks back at me, but it's laughing because the joke's on me. You know, how vast must that feeling be when it's the beacon of the universe that is like, all right, kid, but is silently kind of making fun of your pain. You know, that's a hard place to be when it feels like, you know, the cosmos themselves are mocking you just a little bit. It's a lot because the verse, where is it? So many nights I ponder the ins and outs of us to make sense of the madness and take us back then. And it's that then that really kind of F's up the now because we can't reach it. We can't reach that. We can't unlace it and relace it and have it stay that nice pristine bow because as soon as you start walking in that shoe, it's going to undo itself again and there's nothing that we can do on this end of that except for hope. And unpopular opinion incoming. Hope breeds disappointment. Expectation breeds disappointment. And you are just so wonderfully gentle and kind. I love that you're always hopeful. Even through pain, you're hopeful. I'm a little harder. I will hope, and then I will hate myself. I don't ever hate anybody else. And that's usually enough to not want to hope. Not that I would not be hopeful or accepting. It's just I can't look up high enough to see hope. And so I love that even when the moon's laughing at you, you're like, there's still a possibility. That 0.000925 is still, you know, part of 1%. And it's a beautiful, beautiful way to be. And that is, it takes a lot to be able to see things in that light, to be able to see light at all in that kind of darkness. And it's a very catchy tune, no lie. I was like coming along over here with you, but it is a heartbreaking thing to be like, you know, well, deep down, I know you're not coming back. All I want is you to be back here and you're not coming back. And I wonder how long it takes, general question, not you specific. I wonder how long it takes to to live in that place of wanting them to come back, that you finally kind of resign yourself to the fact that that's likely not going to happen, and then they show up. Because that is also fear. I mean, joy is then tempered by, is this real? And all the pain that you felt going into that. And it changes you. But this is a beautiful, beautiful song. A very contemplative and very, it just kind of resonates. So beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Rec and Tor, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry. I came back too late.
See how you are. It's fine. But, you know, you can listen to it later. You're good. It's a wonderful song. You will love it. And Sky, your thoughts?
It was beautifully done, and I just absolutely love, you can tell when a poet writes lyrics, and it's always amazing to me when I look at songwriters and who writes their own stuff and who actually wrote what the people are singing, and when you have a good writer writing these lyrics and you have someone who, you know, is in their core a poet, the lyrics always sound different. You know, there's always a metaphor, and which is music that I always love, which is why I always was in here to Meatloaf, because his storytelling was amazing. And every time I hear your songs, it's the poetry in the lines that always catch me. When you speak of, where was it? Here. And the sun burns up and turns to bone, the idea of that, you know, when we decay in the ground, all that's left is our bones, and well, mostly, and the idea of putting that in replace of the moon, and kind of, it's so poetic, the metaphor is brilliant, and it hits hard, because you can relate that, even though obviously the moon's not going to waste away in a bone, but when you put that in perspective of what you really mean, it's just quite brilliant, that kind of dedication. And so many nights I ponder the ins and outs of us to make sense of the madness and take us back then. The way that you shift the lines to kind of keep that lyrical cadence, but disconnect the lines, and yet they still are connected, I think is really well done, and not easily done, to connect two things that don't run on in a sentence but clip off and continue the idea and the sentiment. Really well done.
And Sweet Pea, your thoughts?
If there was only a way to take us back to the then, before the world fell apart and became the now, between then and the now, what might be keeping us here before the pain became the madness we perceived as love.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Actually, I have a poem that's all between the then and now. Sky, I can't remember the name of it. Sky, one day you might remember the name of it, because you're better at remembering my stuff than I am, but I don't remember. I know that's the one that I sing in it, but I don't remember it. But it's all between the then and the now. This stuff happened. And I hate that I know it exists, but I'll never be able to find it before the show's over. So, oh well. So why did I mention it? I have no idea. But Sky, you are up, and I am all excited because I like listening to you read.
This is called "Where Something Swift and Clever Pretends to Love Like a Thief." And when I planted my soul in the chest of your words, between the wrinkle and drum of untouchable things, melancholy things, things that dip themselves in the nightshade of sorrow, I saw it sink like a stone in mud. I cared not where it lied, as long as it was kept tucked in the dressers of your creased hands and feckless love. Years have passed since then, and I finally feel its rip. Perhaps it was a slow severing that I knowingly endured, a day-to-day wanting, turning up empty palms, a gas mask sucked to lips, a filter through which I could breathe in your toxins. But over time, I've learned. I've given dreams to foreign fields, a death meadow that revels in breaking bones, where something swift and clever pretends to love, like a thief. And I have begun to wither, a leaf reaching with brittle fingers to bare branches, asking for the return of its wealth of green and the soul of its body. And hope.
I hate you, but I love you. It's fine. This, I cannot. I just cannot. A day-to-day wanting, turning empty palms, a gas mask sucked to lips, a filter through which I could breathe in your toxins. I own a plethora of those. It's so unfortunate. Your verbiage, I love feckless, by the way. It's one of my favorite words. Your verbiage paints such beautiful imagery. When I planted my soul in the chest of your words, I mean, I cannot even. Between the wrinkle and drum of untouchable things, melancholy things, that's a broken heart, and that is quite lovely. That is as lovely a description as I have ever heard.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Where something swift and clever pretends to love. Like, it ain't that the way, though. And I feel bad because oftentimes these wisps of love are true in the moment. It is all that they can do because they can only love as deep as their pain will allow them to be free. And in that, they take all you have to give. With no desire or even thought of returning it, because they are incapable through their own path of whatever that only allows them to love so deep. And this is just gorgeous. This is just gorgeous.
Thank you.
I just can't even. Oh, you kill me. So, Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the thoughts of this. It gives me the impression in the beginning of you, you know, offering your love and, you know, basically kind of saying, do with it what you will. You know, bury it like a stone in the mud or, you know, keep it as long as you keep it. You know, whatever you do with it what you will. I just, you know, and then the realization that it's not returned kind of overwhelms you and overtakes you, and you're left with that emptiness that you know, it's just, it churns inside you, you know, it's got a lot of emotion to it that's just
I'm telling you, because you have all of our hearts all up in our throat. It's fine. It's not magic. It's good. And, Sweet Pea, what are your thoughts?
Between the wrinkle and the drum of untouchable things, melancholy things that in themselves in the night shade of sorrow, I saw it sink like stone in mud. I cared not where it lied as long as it was kept. I feel that way about pain all the time. And I love nightshade of sorrow. As long as I can carry it, as long as I know where it is, it's always there. It comforts me because I know what it is. If no one's going to take it away, no one's going to own it but me. No one can. No one can take it. It was mine. It was my toxin to breathe in. And as long as I have it, I know I had you. I know that love was there. That existed within me.
even though you gave me that pain and I'll have that, I'll also have that love. And I think that that's a brilliance in and of itself. Or something swift and clever pretends to love like a thief, and I have begun to wither. Asking for the return is of its wealth of green and the soul of its body. But I still have it. It's still mine. I mean, your imagery is just stunning, and it's just beautiful, and this is a poem I have never heard from you or read from you. And it's just, it's mine to carry my burden, because I was granted the love, but I'll keep the pain too. I really, really like this.
Thank you, sweet.
Perfect. So I have Hatter on the board, and he asked for a reader, so I think I will read him. It's funny because I always volunteer everybody else to read, but I will read him. This is It's Only an Empty Sound from our very own Jay Hatter. And it goes like this. They spoke of a fool behind his back, wondering who really cared, speaking of things they knew he lacked, watching as they compared. A rule for a fool is to become a part of something too big to own, standing amidst a woolly crowd. You're standing there alone, reflecting light to expose the sin, stepping out to be dragged back in. Ask the questions that you most fear, gathering words at your feet. Find the answers others have found just beyond your reach. Within the darkness of later years, the lines will have tied you down. Do not speak as if to teach. It's only an empty sound. End poem. You know what? Maybe if they try to teach instead of judging and causing all that pain that you had to suffer through alone, it would have mattered. But this far after the fact, keep your so-called wisdom to yourself, people. Your time has passed. I'm just saying. I enjoyed reading this. I love your artwork, by the way. I always like it when you put your drawings up because they're just lovely. Your bricks are beautiful. I love that. They spoke of a fool behind his back. You know, I've always hated that. And it's not even when people whisper. It's when they're standing there loud enough for you to hear the giggles or pointing, or that you know, they make you know that it's about you. And yet, you know, yeah, not okay. Not okay, judgmental people. And I like this. Standing amidst a ruly crowd, you're standing there alone, and you are, because the world is full of clicky people, and I wish it was just relegated to high school, but it's not. It's in the workplace. It's in society at large. It's everywhere you go. People make snap judgments and treat you accordingly, and it's usually misplaced and unfortunate, and it is painful. And if you're a quiet type and don't ever impose yourself into a conversation or, you know, call people out or whatever options there are in those situations, it's just a lot easier to be quiet. Well, you're not going to think what they want to think. It doesn't really matter. And then you go about your business and, you know, forget them. But that is a hard thing to encounter. And it's a hard thing to know you still want to be a part of things, even though you've encountered this. It's not easy to put yourself out there, even if it looks like nothing to everybody else. So I really enjoyed this, and it was a privilege and an honor to read it for you. So, Sweet Pea, your thoughts?
I love the title. It's Only an Empty Sound. Because when they speak of us behind their back, that's all it should be, just empty sounds, like wind. No one should hear it. No one should care about what they say. But it does, and it is. We hear it loud and clear, and we're standing out there all alone, judgy. Ask the question that you most fear, gathering your word to your feet, find the answers that others found. But do not speak as if to teach. It's only an empty sound. I love that. I think there is more moral and ethical and all of that in these few little stanzas than half of what I've learned sitting in Sunday school for years. Well done, Hatter. Very well done.
And Rack and Tor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this a lot, Hatter. You talk about the empty sounds and people whispering behind your backs and whatnot, and it's almost like, you know, you're going to live your life and people are going to, you know, think what they want to think, and it matters, but it doesn't matter, you know, and there's that feeling that kind of comes over you. It's fuel to try and intervene, and you know it's going to happen, but you know, and who's the fool really? You know, is it the people whispering, or is it me for ignoring them? You know, and you're kind of taking that higher ground. So I really like that idea.
And sky.
This is well timed, and I'm going to hone in on the stanza because it's asked the questions that you most fear gathering word or feet. And I think sometimes we don't want to ask those questions because we are, like he says, afraid of those answers, or we could be afraid of those answers. And sometimes it's easier to stay silent than to watch this thing that you've built kind of tumble down. But there is no truth in that. And I think when someone can gather up the strength and ask those hard questions and listen to those hard words, and ultimately it is painful, but the truth is definitely healthier and faster to know where someone, better to know faster where someone stands than build this truth, this made-up truth around them. So I really, really like that section, especially in relation to kind of the topic and the what we're talking about today. And then as a whole, when he goes through, it definitely can be seen on a bigger scale of you know, a societal view, but looking at it in that individual relationship view of it's in any relationship, it's kind of hard. It's scary when you know that the words might not be the ones you want to hear. So really well done. And pretty bird, I don't know if you see, but you have to scroll up a little bit.
I have to scroll up?
Yeah.
On what? What am I looking at?
On the topic board.
Okay, you have to refresh.
I'm so omnious. Yeah, you got to refresh. It's like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Sweet Jesus. Okay, give me a second. But I don't know, I'm not seeing anything.
That's what I'm
just
saying.
Look for my, I dropped a link. It's right there. I see it.
On like the main chat or on the topic board?
On the topic board. No, on the main chat.
Catch that one.
On the main chat.
Okay, you're killing me.
Sorry.
Give me a second.
Give me voices, right?
Yeah.
Your poem is on the board that you were looking for.
Oh, my poem. Okay. I have Titus up. You know what? I want to read. I kind of want. You found my poem. That's hysterical. You are awesome.
Yeah.
I dropped it 10 minutes ago when you asked.
I just thought, yeah, I missed the whole gosh darn thing. I didn't even see it. That's hysterical. And looking at it now, like it, Pretty Bird does not register in my eyeballs. It just doesn't. That's so sad. But it's true. So I will absolutely read that one. But I want to put Titus. I want to play Titus first because I want to play him tonight. He's always patient and kind. I do have. Three more poems is so I'm going to be all kinds of greedy and ask if I could do can I play those poems on your show on Thursday so we're not like you know here for another 2 hours.
Absolutely.
You are
or,
awesome.
Or
okay,
on
so Titus
tomorrow.
And then me.
Yeah.
What?
Or on my show tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh, we can do that too.
Yeah, we can do that too. Okay, we're good. Whichever one has the most time, just squeeze me in. All right. So, Ty, I heard you guys are just so lovely. You're just so lovely. Thank you. I appreciate that. I have Titus on the board, and he has a SoundCloud, which I just love because he's got such a voice. It's such a voice for poetry. It's crazy. And if you're ready, I will play him. You guys have him up?
I do.
Yes? Okay, here we go.
To remain in living memory, it remains to be seen, life without you, nothingness within and yet still alive, the part of us through death. What does leaving do to the other? Their time doesn't thrive. It remains to be seen, never to heal, the divide between living and one's death. Should it be mine, it was always to steal your heart, without loss a worthy last breath. It remains to be seen 10 years older, oh, a wife who should never have cut short. Love remains now as in death the beholder, for better or for worse, then it damn well ought. It remains to be seen to remain for always, once in a lifetime this love story of ours, loving memory of words holds worthy praise. For which our love did bring to read for hours.
Well, that one did it for me. I'm sitting here with tears because I can't, because I'm all in my feels. Titus. Talk about timing. Now, I remember this one. It just gets me when it gets me, but it got me. Oh, Lordy. I did this junk to myself with this topic. I know what my problem is. I should know better. But where is it? To part us through death, what does leaving do to the other? Their time doesn't thrive. Yeah, but seriously, you know, here is the thing about love. People do not love hard by themselves. I mean, there's infatuation and there's, you know, whatever with the stalking and the whatnot, but if you're in a loving relationship with somebody, when you get way past them in depth of emotion, you can feel the disparity and you're always looking for ways to try to help them get to where you are, and it's imbalanced. And despite what we want, despite, you know, how we want it to be balanced, sometimes it just isn't. But when you are in that place for any length of time where it is that balanced equation, where it's all the good despite whatever, you know, baggage everybody comes with, when it is all the good things, when you are bonded that deeply, and that whatever the circumstance, whatever the emotion, whatever the thought, somebody, you know, severs that, especially if there's no real reason, it is devastating. It destroys the person. You cannot be who you were before. That person no longer exists. And while we can heal and spackle and put on smiles and learn to love again and learn to want to trust people, it's never as innocent and open as that first. That's the first person who saw you broken and loved you anyway. And I almost want to say, how dare they not think of what they're going to do to somebody before leaving like that? How dare they take that love and basically, you know, say, up yours. I don't want it. I ain't giving it back to you because it's useless now. I didn't use your love up. See you later. Bye. And that's not okay. And even if it's a valid reason, even if it causes less pain to sever all ties than to linger in those little moments of not being able to be together, it's not just about the one person, it's about the both of you. And if only people would have enough respect for what the relationship was or is or whatever to be able to talk through that and say a real goodbye for whatever time that is, it would stop that wound from bleeding so deeply. It would stop it from progressing to the point where it's all fear of being hurt, even though you're already hurt. This is painful, and this is longing, and this is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing it with us, Titus. And Sky, your thoughts?
And another devastatingly beautiful piece in where was this? Right from the beginning, and remains to be seen, life without you. Nothingness within and yet still alive. And people speak of loss, and they're speaking of, okay, I have to live my life without somebody, or I have to go through this, and with the loss of them, and for whatever reason, but this poem, we'll just leave it at them. It says kind of the opposite. There is no day without this person. There is no life without them, and yet there is the hollowness that resides within that company. And the idea of that and not being able to escape that is heartbreaking. And the story throughout, and kind of that longing and never being able to, you know, and to heal from that fully. Again, he says in his author's notes, through poetry and words, he's able to kind of cope with that. And that in itself is a beautiful thing, but again, you're living within your words, you're reliving that moment. And it's kind of like an emotional, you can't really emotionally escape that. And I thought that kind of hold was very present in this piece. Well done.
Absolutely. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Okay, Titus. I have to mention there's a joke that kind of mentions that line, you know, find outside a funeral home, remains to be seen. But the way that you tell your story and the way that your poem goes and the way that you repeat it, you bring out the profundity in that thought. You know, once you get past the humor of, you know, oh, it remains, ha-ha, very funny, you remind us about, you know, the relationship that the people had before and how the life is uncertain and what's going to happen still, you know, is still unfolding. You know, the story still isn't over. And you know, there's a connection in that you bring about in your piece that really, you know, hits home. You know, when people have that connection, that's a very enviable thing, and that's, I think, what anyone that's in any kind of relationship is always striving for, is that connection. You know, it's very much about, you know, what the other person thinks of you and things like that, and you know, you bring about that fondness of a person, and you know, the whole give and take of a relationship, even though you're telling it, you know, from the aftermath. So I enjoyed this piece a lot.
Absolutely. And my sweet, your thoughts on Titus's piece?
I don't know how Titus has the ability to take such tragedy and sadness and wrap it in words of brilliance and love and comfort. He takes the ability to use love, as he does in several of his poems, as this soothing way to bring life and make it worth living, even in one of the most tragic things that life can bring us, which is death, and say, yes, this is the greatest loss, but it will be with me forever, and I'll have this bond with them. And as hard as it is, for which our love did, to read for hours, I'm going to wake up with it every day. I'm going to be with you every day. It's always going to be mine. And it, somehow it's going to bring me a peace with the loss. So he always has that intertwine of love. No matter where I go, it is a guiding force, a guiding peace within me. So I'm not sure how he manages to do that, even in the tragic piece he just brought us.
Well, because he's awesome. So you guys have shows coming up. I know that we are currently off the air, but if they're listening before the shows tomorrow and whatnot, then it would be nice if they knew. So, Sky, since your show's tomorrow, please tell us a little bit about it.
I'm going onward with my Soul Meridian new series that I'm doing. We're doing Manway and Varda. And you don't have to really know the text to be involved in the show. You can click the book and select a quote and write a poem or put a previous poem that you think goes with the quote. Or you can look at the two characters that are highlighted. And, of course, you can use their character traits through metaphor. There's a lot of heavy mythology that's lent to the creation of the book. So, you know, senses of nature like wind is definitely one of them, and the sun, the stars, not the sun on this one, the stars. So there's so many ways that you can really take the prompt. Please do so. It's at your creativity. And I am on, I don't know what time I'm on, so I'm going to guess it's going to be somewhere between 8 and 9:30 tomorrow.
So keep an eye on the board.
Yeah.
And Sweet Pea, your show is going to be very interesting as well.
Yes, my show is about numerology, which was supposed to be last week on 04/04/24, but it's going to be this way. It's just about, what do you believe about numerology? Do numbers coincide with the ancients and how they place like various, like Stonehenge, or, you know, does your birthday have something to do with your personality? Does math really rule the world? Does the Bible, based on, you know, the word of the page, and how, like, is 666 something that we should be afraid of? I am a weirdo, and I've been told numerous times in my life that because my birthday is my birth year, that I have some kind of special, I don't know what it is, force with the universe. I've been told several times, but I don't pay attention. But because 1966 is actually 1966, and that is my birthday, there's special meaning in that, and astrologists, like, get themselves all wet about it. So, yeah, numerology is all kind of special. It's an interesting subject. And I want to go back to Sky subject just to say that Sky subject is so freaking interesting, and I owe her two poems on it. And unfortunately, I bowl on Wednesday night, or I would be on that show yapping my mouth off. If you have not looked into it, it is the most creative insanity of it. It looks very complicated, but it's not. These characters are brilliant. They're beautiful. They sing songs. They're about melodies. They're about love. They're about opposites attracting. I mean, tomorrow night, it's about these two people that literally are about wind and all of this. And like, one controls this land and the other is about this. And the very first one was about fire. And so there's so much creativity in everywhere that you can go. I cannot promote the ability of the creative senses, that it's like the beginning of time and you can go anywhere with it. And if you're not writing for this series, you're a nut job, because it's literally unleash your creativity anywhere. It's the beginning of time and couples and all that. And it looks complicated and it's really not. And I'm in love with this series, and I apologize I'm not there because I do bowl. And I absolutely am in love with it. And I have poems that I owe you, and I'm like halfway through three of them. And then I go like, wait a minute, I need to go in this direction. And I get myself overcomplicated. And so I have all this stuff on my board. And I'm sorry, Sky, because I do owe them to you, but I've got to figure out how to shorten them. Otherwise, I'm writing my own freaking books.
Well, sorry. Yeah, and Tolkien is definitely. Yeah, so funny. Tolkien is quite brilliant. And hey, my mom's birthday is today, and her birthday is 4/9/49, because she was born 4/9 in 1949. So, that's cool, yeah.
See? There you go. And it's all crazy like that.
Well, and thank you.
So, yeah.
OMG. Plugging
You're
my
welcome.
Show. You guys are awesome. I am loving how everybody just lifts each other up. There is nobody shoving anybody down here, which is wonderful because that's a hard thing to find in today's in this day and age. So, Sky, you are brilliant because earlier in the show, Between the Then and the Now, we had that discussion and you found my poem. You found my poem. So I'm going to go ahead and read this and then we will close the show. And I have three poems. I have Miss Deborah Lee. I have Agrisman. I have Little Gary, which I wish you would have called back. I would have loved to have had him read for us. We will be putting on probably tomorrow. If I can't do 8, but if you're on at 8, that's fine. I'll still call in later. So,
yeah,
I've been pretty versed. 3-hour tour.
I honestly don't think
I know, right?
Because it's been. Going to bed early. I'm going to bed later. But I certainly
the later
can
works
talk
for me
to get working. There. And if you could just put them on the board though, because I'm in bed. Like
I will.
I'm not even on my computer.
I absolutely will. Yeah. No worries. And I appreciate you let me borrow that the time to do that for them because I hate that I didn't get to them. But this is the fishbowl of my mind, houses untamed sharks. And I'm just telling you right now, I never would have found it in a million years because that's how I title my stuff. Okay. So this is the fishbowl of my mind, houses untamed sharks. Not sharks. So sweet Jesus, my mouth today, I cannot. Well, nobody wants untamed sharks. That's not okay. I'm going to try that one more time. The fishbowl of my mind houses untamed sharks. Okay. Infinity stretches between the now and the then, but between the then and the now lives the laugh that rings music. If only I'd caught it in a cup, I could still taste the sound. Between the then and the now kisses scarred rosebuds on my skin into a new baseline for passion, knowing I've grown too cold to burn. Between the then and the now was proof of my weakness and hope that deep wounds don't have to be fatal. Between the then and the now hangs the lyrics I understood far too late to make a difference, mashed a remix that reads, how does it feel to know I wasn't lost until I found you? Infinity stretches between the now and whenever the then is. Until then, I could still taste the sound in scarred rosebuds, proof of my weakness, far too late to make a difference. And poem. And with that, I am going to say good night, all. You guys are awesome.
Oh, no, no, you're not. You're not allowed to do that. Of course you're not, because we're all going to say, what the fuck do you think you're saying goodnight to before somebody says something? I will stand by my very last comment. You are the veil between the then and the now, the shadow that keeps the world on the edge. Speak, and all will be damned or loved. Because that is the exact quote I would say now to this, and the exact feeling I have. Because when Pretty Bird speaks, we are all damned or we are loved. And that's how I feel now. That's how absolutely between then and now it stays the same. Let us be damned or loved by the Pretty Bird. Sky, please say your piece.
Well, this one's on my favorite list, so I knew what it was. We have a lot of yours on my favorite list tonight. And I can't say I know everyone, but I know a lot. This one particularly because I like when people sing to me. So you are singing in it, so I really loved it and I remembered it. And the idea, you know, this, I mean, there's, I literally can say every stanza is my favorite. I'm going to go with the, if only I caught it in a cup, I could still taste the sound, the idea of that beautiful music that one makes, and then I wish I would have caught it in a cup so that I can savor it each sip. It's just so, so, so beautiful. And quite often when we're in the middle of something, we're enjoying it. We're not always thinking. Sometimes we could be thinking about I'm going to outwardly savor this because I don't think it will last. But not a lot of people think like that. And then when it's over, you're just like, I wish I would have savored each moment. And then, or if you're like right at the end and it becomes inevitable that something's going to happen, you start to cherish those moments more, even if they have a darker, you know, a darker outcome. And then, I mean, I really could just, every single line. I think it's wonderfully musical. I think it pulls to the heart, and it is one of my favorites. Thank you for singing it. And I just love how you bring taste and sound together, because they're not two senses that always, you know, you don't say, I taste a sound, and you, that's not something that comes to someone's mind right away. But when you put it in like this, it just so wonderfully goes together on so many levels, and I really love that idea, that metaphor, and the way that the emotion kind of pulls through that. Really well done.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. The fishbowl and the sharks was quite clever. Sorry, and Tommy, sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. And Raconteur, before we say goodnight, say your piece.
I got lost in the beauty of that piece. It was lovely.
Now it's all back to you. Say goodnight, pretty bird, pretty bird.
Well, I would like to thank all the people who wrote for me, those I got to, and those, unfortunately, I'm too long-winded to have squeezed in. My apologies. We will get to you tomorrow, and I am happy to be able to put you on the air. Thank you for letting me share your time, Sky. Thank you guys for hanging out with me, and AP and Gary and Bud, who was on the wall the whole time, and Hatter. You guys are awesome. And I will see you again on Sky Show tomorrow, and probably on Sweet Show on Thursday, because apparently I'm going to be up in everybody's business this week because I'm in that kind of mood. So I love you guys. Thank you
Yay.
For sharing time. I appreciate pretty it. Bird. Thank you, Rack, for for always, always, always having my back and being there. You're awesome. Good night, all. Sweet dreams. And
good
I will
night.
See you next time. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye.
Okay, see you.